Good morning. How are you today?
Good morning, Your Honor. Doing well.
All right.
Good morning.
First thing you'll notice is we're kind of spread out. I'm in the Carson City Courthouse. Justice Silver is in the Las Vegas Courthouse. Justice Stiglitz is appearing remotely. And it's all a little bit of awkward. We've got video issues, audio issues, so we're trying to keep it all smooth and doing the best we can. But as you can see, we can't see Justice Stiglitz, but we can hear her. Justice Stiglitz, are you on?
I'm ready.
Okay, all right then. We will call up our next case. This is docket number 81618, Gadagna, I'm not sure how I pronounce that, versus National Credit Adjusters. Counsel, are you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and would you like to reserve any time?
Yes, 3 minutes, please.
Okay, 3 minutes you got. Go ahead.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. Karel Mikhailov of Howard & Howard on behalf of Petitioner Anthony Guadagna. Your Honors, this court should vacate the district court's contempt order for three reasons. First, the district court violated Mr. Guadagna's due process rights by holding him personally liable for all of the attorney's fees and costs incurred by the plaintiff in the underlying case, despite the fact that plaintiff never named Mr. Guadagna as a party to the underlying case or proved alter ego, let alone even try to amend his pleadings to allege it. Second, the district court improperly expanded the parameters of NRS 22-100 by improperly finding Mr. Guadagna liable for all the attorney's fees incurred in the entire case. The statute specifically limits the award to those arising from the alleged contempt, and the district court erred by not allowing Mr. Guadagna to purchase contempt. And third, NRCP 37 does not provide a basis to impose sanctions against a non-party, and to the extent this court finds that it does, NRCP 37 also limits the award to reasonable attorney's fees and costs to those related to the alleged discovery violation. Now, Your Honors, as to the first point, first reason why this court should reverse the district court's contempt order, as a fundamental right of due process, plaintiff was required to name Mr. Guadagna as a party to the underlying case, allege alter ego, and prove the elements of the alter ego claim by a preponderance of the evidence in order to hold them liable for all of plaintiff's attorney's fees and costs incurred in the entire case. Both the United States Constitution and the Nevada Constitution guarantee that a person must have due process before the government can take away his property. Mr. Guadagna was not afforded these rights. Now, although this court has not specifically addressed a case where a party is seeking to hold a non-party personally liable for attorney's fees and costs through a contempt order, this court has addressed a similar situation in Cali versus Bowling. In Cali versus Bowling, a party attempted to add a non-party to its final judgment using the alter ego doctrine by simply amending the judgment. Although the non-party was not individually named in the pleadings, the district court amended the final judgment to make the non-party personally liable for all the attorney's fees and costs and the judgment in that case. On appeal, this court concluded that such mechanism violated the non-party's due process rights and held that a party wishing to assert the alter ego claim must do so in an independent case.
Now, let me ask you this. That certainly involves alter ego, but here your client was an officer of the corporation or CEO of the corporation. And what the other side is saying is there's no other way to get the books or to get the records which are requested other than him complying with the court's orders. And so my question to you is there's certainly case law out there regarding civil contempt under NRS 22 regarding officer liability. What's your position if this court, do you think it would be helpful since there is no law in Nevada on this regarding a non-party, but here it's an officer of the corporation as far as supplemental briefing regarding liability based on a corporate officer's involvement. Because there's certainly case law around the country regarding contempt for an officer of a corporation. Would it be helpful to this Nevada to look at that area?
Certainly, Your Honor, to articulate its position and provide some precedent in this state, which we much need in business court matters. As it stands, the plaintiff never subpoenaed Mr. Guadagna to obtain the records. And as of right now, the statute does shield the managers and members from personal liability from sanctions such as we have in this case. Now, to hold him personally liable when he wasn't even named in the case would essentially overturn some of the case law that we already have in this case, or in the state, I apologize. And simply looking at the precedent in other states can certainly help us and would guide business folks that want to start business and operate businesses in Nevada to see what sort of liability they face as they make decisions regarding their actions in litigation. So that's a lengthy answer to your answer to the question, Justice Silver, but yes, I think we should look to precedent in other states regarding that to give us some guidance on this issue.
And I'm saying contempt, not a judgment, but I'm saying for contempt orders.
Exactly, Your Honor, because as it stands right now, the contempt statute limits the award of attorney's fees to those arising out of the contempt. And to the extent we're looking at his contempt right now individually, it only arises from his non-appearance at the deposition. And we have no case law regarding the entity actually doing something improper as it did in this case. And quite frankly, there is no evidence or evidentiary hearing to show that Mr. Guadagna is the only officer or manager or member in the underlying proceeding. That is something that was for the plaintiff to do and their burden to carry, which was not done in this case. And that's why we have the procedures that you have set in place to allow us to have separate proceedings to see whether there's any other owners who should be responsible. And we're certainly not saying that there's no avenue for folks to go after those managers. It's just that following the procedures that we have in place right now were not followed.
Thank you.
And Your Honors, going back to some of the decisions that this court has rendered, we do recognize the distinction between the representative capacity and individual capacity, as the court has done in the 2016 decision in Mona versus a judicial district court, and the recent 2020 decision in Mills versus a judicial district court. So certainly a decision in this case could provide further guidance on how we could handle this. But the court does represent representative capacities and individual capacities. Mr. Guadagna was not named in either one of those in this case, and yet he was held liable through the sua sponte alter ego determination. And as a result, Mr. Guadagna was never notified in the underlying proceeding that plaintiff was seeking to hold him personally liable. And this kind of goes back to the question that you asked, Justice Silver. We need to make sure we have some precedent that allows the businesses to operate in certain matters. And here, Mr. Guadagna did not have any notice that plaintiffs are trying to hold him personally liable. And so he didn't have any opportunities to defend himself with the array of defenses that are available and the procedures afforded to parties in those sort of proceedings. So to uphold the contempt order as it stands now under the current laws, to essentially nullify the protections of NRS 86371, nullify the alter ego doctrine, and deprive Mr. Guadagna of his due process rights. So this court should not allow the district court and the plaintiff to conflate the defendant and Mr. Guadagna individually. Now, going to the second reason as to why this court should vacate the district court's contempt order, district court improperly expanded the parameters of NRS 22-100, which specifically limits the award of attorney's fees to those associated with the alleged contempt. Mr. Guadagna does not dispute the district court has the power to sanction a non-party. However, such power is limited by statute. And that statute here is NRS 22-100, which specifically states, and this is on page 14 of our writ petition, to the attorney's fees incurred as a result of the contempt. That statutory language is clear and not open for interpretation. Nevertheless, the district court expanded the statute's parameters. So as it stands today, district court ruling holds Mr. Guadagna personally liable for plaintiff's filing of the complaint, attendance of a settlement conference, filing a motion for summary judgment against defendant, and other filings and costs and fees that are related to its suit against the defendant. Such fees have nothing to do with Mr. Cadena's alleged contempt, which was a one-time non-appearance at his deposition, which he sought to remedy and purge. And that turns us to the next issue where the district court erred. The district court did not allow Mr. Cadena to purge his contempt. He had one-time non-appearance. I understand that the opposing party says that the deposition was continued three times. Deposition was continued twice to allow the settlement conference to go forward. There's only one deposition that he did not attend. And there's simply one non-appearance which has resulted in a sanction of $85,000 against Mr. Cadena. This is completely improper. Mr. Cadena's counsel, who was retained to represent him at the order show cause hearing, informed plaintiff's counsel that Mr. Cadena would appear for his deposition at the time and place of plaintiff's choosing. This was also conveyed to the district court during the order show cause hearing, yet the district court was willing to purge his contempt if there was a declaration. Apparently, Mr. Cadena's counsel's representation was not enough. Well, Mr. Cadena attached his declaration and attesting to the fact that he would attend, showing his efforts, trying to attend his deposition, and that certainly was not enough, and the district court still held him liable for those attorney fees. So the actual amount today, as it stands, is $85,451.66. So this is what was imposed against a one-time non-appearance at a deposition, despite his repeated offers and efforts to attend in a place and time of plaintiff's choice.
Mr. Mikhailov, nobody filed any objection to the order show cause. Nothing was filed, and he didn't appear. Well, what do you have to say to that? I mean, it's certainly not just one deposition.
Your Honor, certainly, as I would expand the any sort of contempt that happened here, it was certainly not non-appearance, but the attendance of the order show cause hearing, there was a last-minute document that was provided to Mr. Cadena's counsel just the day before the hearing, showing that this was happening. The typical, hey, I have a hearing tomorrow, go attend the hearing. Mr. Cadena's counsel was at the same time changing firms and did not have sufficient time to prepare a declaration, which was what the district court was looking for. And Mr. Cadena's counsel believed that her appearance on his behalf was sufficient, which, as we know, as we sit here today now, that's why we're here, it was not enough. So to the extent that there was an additional contempt finding, if you find it, there was a non-appearance. But once again, it was because of Mr. Cadena's counsel's belief that her appearance would be sufficient. As her as an officer of the court and her representation of the court, she believed that that was enough, but it was not.
Well, how's that an abuse of discretion by the district court when she failed to file a declaration, failed to file an opposition, and the client failed to appear? What law or what case could you cite that a district court has abused its discretion finding contempt under those situation, in that situation?
Yes, Justice Silver, I don't have case law regarding that specific scenario, and I would concede that the district court is within its discretion to hold somebody liable under that set of circumstances. However, we're looking here at contempt sanction that goes to the beginning, origination of this lawsuit, which is wholly improper. And I hope that fully answers your question, Justice Silver.
Yeah, that answered it. Thank you.
And turning to the third reason.
You're actually, just so you're aware, you're cutting into your rebuttal time. You're at 249. Do you want to reserve that or go proceed?
Yes, Your Honor. Just 1 minute and I'll wrap up here and before I have 2 minutes left. Just the third reason for why this court should vacate the district court's contempt order. NRCP 37 does not provide a basis to impose sanctions against a non-party. And although this court hasn't addressed that specific issue, we do have some precedent out of the Ninth Circuit. I know that we looked to the federal courts and specifically Ninth Circuit for some guidance. The case is Penwall Court versus Durand versus Wayland. And that case stated that NRCP or Federal Rule 45 is the only one that can actually hold a non-party liable for failure to appear for pursuant to a subpoena. So similar here in Nevada, the only Nevada rule of civil procedure that can do so is NRCP 45E. And it also has the same limitation as NRS 22-100. You can only sanction and fine the party for the reasonable attorney's fees arising out of the discovery violation. But you know, to the extent that the court finds that NRCP 37 does apply here, NRCP 37 also has the same limitation. And the district court improperly expanded that. And the contempt order specifically relies on Rule 37D, which specifically limits it to the reasonable attorney's fees and costs arising from the discovery violation. This court has upheld that in Nevada Power versus Fluor, Illinois, specifically saying that you cannot award attorney's fees in the entire case and limit it to the actual discovery violation. Unless you have any questions, Your Honor, I'll rest and I'll save the rest of the time for rebuttal.
Okay, colleagues, any other questions? Okay, thank you. Mr. Haven, you ready?
Yes, good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Tyson Haven of Duane Morris on behalf of Real Party and Interest National Credit Adjusters LLC, which I will be referring to as NCA moving forward. I'm going to begin by discussing the doctrine of latches and why Petitioner Guadagna's writ petition should be barred as untimely. As this court held in Buchholz, a writ petition is a, quote, extraordinary remedy subject to the doctrine of latches. Here, the writ was not filed until August 13, 2020, exactly 203 days after the court's notice of entry of order finding contempt was filed and served. Moreover, the writ was not filed until exactly 105 days after the May 1st, 2020 notice of entry of the court's judgment for monetary sanctions was filed and served. As this court is well aware, under NRAP 4A1, an appeal must be filed, quote, no later than 30 days after the date written notice of entry of the judgment or order appealed from is served. Here, obviously, Guadagna filed a writ petition, not an appeal. However, as detailed on page 8 of petitioner's writ, the only reason petitioner chose to file a writ as opposed to an appeal is because he is a non-party. It seems clearly unfair and unjust that a party to an action must file an appeal within 30 days, whereas a non-party can wait hundreds of days to file a writ petition, which is essentially just a quasi-appeal, especially in cases like this.
Mr. Haven, yeah. I hate to jump in, but since we're here at oral argument, if we disagree with your latches argument and we go right into the contempt, what is your position on what I posed to appellant's counsel regarding supplemental briefing on officer liability and contempt proceedings, where here your client was demanding the books and the consumer records, which was kind of the crux of this entire litigation? What is your position about supplemental briefing regarding that type of liability?
Thank you, Your Honor. I personally don't think that is necessary because the court's order did not even consider alter ego because that had nothing to do with the order. The order all stemmed from petitioner's contemptuous behavior engaged in his individual capacity.
But it's his capacity as an officer of the corporation. Yeah, he's an individual, but he's not being sued here. He's being held in contempt for not bringing those documents that you want, and he's the CEO of a corporation. So if we disregard the alter ego, and you're talking about corporate liability, it's your position that supplemental briefing wouldn't assist your client in the contempt proceedings against this individual?
Well, I would certainly defer to the court. If the court thinks it would be helpful, we would be more than happy to provide supplemental briefing.
All right, thank you.
All right, so next, moving on to the merits of the petitioner's writ, I first want to address petitioner's assertion in the reply that the district court's order will, quote, upend Nevada corporate law and obliviate the alter ego doctrine, end quote. In reality, the district court's contempt order and related sanction judgment were certainly much more nuanced. The court never considered or assumed, nor was it relevant to the court's findings of contempt as to whether Guadagna's company, Summit, of which Guadagna is the sole member manager, is his alter ego. The court simply found, based on the totality of the circumstances, as I will be further discussing, that Guadagna should be held jointly and severally liable for the attorney's fees and costs stemming from Guadagna's willful and malicious contemptuous behavior in his individual capacity.
But under what rule is a district court permitted to find joint and several liability against a non-party?
Under NRS 22, which was one of the...
But that's a contempt statute. But what makes him liable for this entire lawsuit? Joint and severally liable for this entire lawsuit, which is what the court found.
So the attorney's fees and costs, as the judge found, all stemmed from petitioner's contemptuous behavior. And I'll give you one example in particular that encompasses all the attorney fees and costs. The court cited Guadagna's withholding of requested documents he was admitted to having in his personal possession as yet another basis to hold him liable. As detailed in NCA's answer and, of course, NCA's underlying application for order to show cause, in order for NCA to stay compliant with CFPB regulations, NCA has been requesting from Guadagna through multiple demand letters sent before this litigation even began that he provide a full accounting of all NCA accounts his company had handled, including related consumer information. And this is largely what led to NCA filing its complaint on July 13, 2018. And without disclosing any confidential negotiations that transpired during the September 5th, 2019 court-ordered settlement conference, Guadagna admitted during the settlement conference that he held in his personal possession the documents NCA had been requesting of him and his company for years, and the court had ordered be produced. Furthermore, no explanation has been provided by Guadagna to date as to why he has yet to provide NCA these documents that he holds in his personal possession and that his company Summit has been ordered to produce. Perhaps the reason Summit has not produced the records to NCA is because Guadagna has refused to provide the records to his company Summit. And you may be asking why there was no subpoena directly on Guadagna. So considering Guadagna admitted to
his impersonal... If the court had put him in custody with a purge clause and said, you know what, you're going in for 25 days or you can produce the records, arguably that would be proper for the district court. What law gives a district court the right to give a non-party to order a non-party to pay all the attorney's fees in a litigation against another party? He is a non-party to this suit. What law can you cite to this court that says that that's proper in contempt?
I think the judge realized that had Guadagna simply complied with NCA's pre-litigation demands to produce the records, this entire action and the associated fees and costs could have been avoided. And therefore, by Guadagna in his individual capacity not producing the documents, it led to this entire litigation and all the attorney fees and costs up into the show cause hearing. And I think the judge took that into account based on the totality of the circumstances, along with all the other contemptuous behavior of Guadagna in issuing his order. A few things I want to clarify. Although petitioner repeatedly claims throughout the briefing that he was found in contempt merely because he refused to attend his deposition, this is false. In reality, the court identified in its January 24, 2020 order at paragraphs 3 through 4 multiple other examples of Guadagna's willful and malicious contemptuous behavior warranting sanctions being issued against him personally. Specifically, as stated in the order, the attorney's fees and costs NCA incurred in prosecuting the underlying action through the date of the show cause hearing, quote, stem from and were exasperated by Anthony Guadagna's willful and malicious behavior, including but not limited to his refusal to participate in discovery, his withholding of documents in his possession, his refusal to comply with the properly served deposition subpoena, and Mr. Guadagna's unexplained absence at the January 14th, 2020 show cause hearing that he was ordered to personally attend. And a few other clarifications. As to the alleged violations of Guadagna's due process rights as a non-party, Guadagna was clearly well aware of his obligation to attend the show cause hearing, considering he called me and discussed his potential liability with me immediately after my client, NCA, filed its November 13th, 2019 application for order to show cause and the
Mr.
subsequent...
Hayton, where is that in the record, the phone call? Where would that be located?
That is in the writ application, which is in the record, and including my affidavit.
No, I mean in the record below, in the district court record. We're not looking at your writ and your moving papers here. Where in the district court would that be located?
Oh, I apologize. I misspoke. Not my writ application. My client's application for the order to show cause. That is where that would be, and that is where my affidavit is. Detailing that call. Guadagna also personally retained his company Summit's attorney, Ms. Perkins, in advance of the show cause hearing. Accordingly, the contention made in the writ that, quote, Mr. Guadagna has not notified at any point during this litigation that plaintiff NCA was seeking to impose liability on him personally, and Mr. Guadagna did not have the opportunity to defend against personal liability with the array of defense and procedures afforded to parties in accordance with their due process rights, end quote, is patently false. If Godogna had reason to object to NCA's intentions to hold him personally liable for its attorney's fees, he should have opposed NCA's motion for order to show cause or the court's order to show cause, which he did not do. At a minimum, Godogna should have at least attended and attempted to explain why he should not be held in contempt at the show cause hearing, which he was ordered to attend, but again chose not to do. Thus, there was no violation of Godogna's due process rights. As to Godogna's purported attempt to purge his contempt, Godogna asserts in the writ that, quote, prior to the show cause hearing, Ms. Perkins contacted NCA's counsel and advised that she represented Mr. Godogna individually and conveyed Mr. Godogna's willingness to appear for the deposition at NCA's convenience, end quote. A key fact left out, however, is that this call was not made to me until the evening prior to the January 14th, 2020 show cause hearing. In other words, Godogna's claim that he was suddenly eager and willing to be deposed after refusing to attend his thrice continued deposition was meaningless and nonsensical, considering by that point in time, discovery had already been closed for months, the dispositive motion deadline had long ago passed, and NCA's motion for summary judgment had already been pending for 2 months. In other words, Godogna's purported attempt to purchase contempt was rightfully ignored by the court. So in conclusion, the district court's order was not only justified and proper under NRS 22 and any other applicable rules and authorities, it was arguably lenient considering Godogna's malicious and willful contemptuous behavior engaged in his individual capacity. And I will open up if any of you have any questions.
I just want to make sure I'm on the right track. He didn't appear at one deposition and he didn't appear at the order show cause hearing. Was there two depositions or one deposition that he didn't show for? I know that there were some moved hearings, but that was agreed upon as well by the other side.
Yes. Thank you, Justice Silver. There were two depositions he did not attend. He did not attend the deposition in his personal capacity, and he did not attend the deposition as the 30B6 witness, both of which were noticed and subpoenaed.
And he didn't attend at a motion, a compel hearing in front of the discovery commissioner?
He did not attend the compel hearing before the judge, Judge Crockett.
And that's part of the order show cause hearing, right?
That's correct.
Thank you. I just want to make sure I was correct.
And those were two amongst the many findings of contempt the court noted in its order.
You can continue.
Okay. I think that is what I have. So thank you, Your Honors.
Okay, then. Colleagues, any additional questions for Mr. Hafen?
No, thank you, Chief.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. And you've got just a tad of rebuttal time left. If you want to go ahead and proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. As to the Latches argument, we are within the case law from Nevada to file our writ. And in addition to that, in opposition to the Latches argument, there is additional factors like Mr. Godogna's consideration of how he wants to proceed, various issues created by COVID on our end and the client's end, my personal participation in the DOT litigation and the trial at the convention center in July, and the time to require the petition. And I'll say, regarding the documents that are being withheld that Mr. Hafen had referenced, the information discussed during settlement conferences and mediations are entirely confidential and should not be before this court. But regardless, this whole notion of Mr. Godogna failing to participate in discovery, it's again conflating Mr. Godogna with a defendant. He did not participate in discovery because he was not part of the discovery, and there's no subpoena issued to him, no subpoena deuces tecum for him to produce documents. And regarding due process, we can see that there was due process for the subpoena and the deposition issue. There's no due process for the alter ego finding of the attorney's fees and costs imposed for the entire case. Unless you have any questions, Your Honor, I have nothing else to add.
All right, colleagues, anything else?
Thank you.
Okay, gentlemen, thank you for the briefs. We appreciate your time here today, and this matter will stand submitted. The court will stand in recess until...